Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we review the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're watching Fakes on Netflix, Growing Up on Disney Plus, The Patient on FX, and Wedding Season on Hulu.
So stay tuned to the end to find out BJ's fake ID story.
It'll be a very short story.
All right, well, let's start with our girls in Canada with Fakes on Netflix. Zoe, played by Amelia Baranok, and Becca, played by Jennifer Tong, started a fake ID empire out of their sleepy town in high school. In this first episode, we get to see some of the federal consequences of that and get a potentially biased origin story told from Zoe's perspective.
So I want to start with one aspect of the show that really stood out to me from the beginning was both characters talking to us, the audience. They broke the fourth wall.
I loved that. It made it feel so young. And I love that you have such unreliable narrators. At one point, Zoe goes, I'm skipping a bit. It'll make sense later. And it didn't, in fact, make sense later. But I love that it implied that Zoe is in charge of the episode. You are fully getting this from her perspective. No one else's.
I agree. And it helps a lot with this dual perspective nature. We start with finding out that this fake ID empire is not going to end well. And now we're rewinding and we're seeing the story from both sides. Although in this first episode, we only get one perspective. But the question is, what really happened?
And you have no idea. So she is very intense about saying this fake ID empire was all Becca's doing. This relationship is unequal. Zoe puts in more work. She might even be experiencing heavier consequences as a result of their choices. And yet, we get a little hint at the end, no spoilers, that there might be more to the story, especially as we continue to get other people's points of view, namely Becca's.
Mm-hmm. And you helped me realize something I didn't even notice. Zoe was really making herself come across as the weaker, more submissive victim in all of this. He's being pushed around by Becca. But there are some moments where she clearly was okay with what was happening. Maybe she's even gonna do some things to hurt Becca in the future.
Mm-hmm. She was like, girl, I tripped and fell, and Becca actually pushed me into a computer, jammed my face into the typewriter. Pulled out this fake ID and said, this is what we're going to do now. She actually forced my hands to laminate them. I mean, it was just so funny to see that she was like acting as though she were dragged the whole way. There's a moment, a slight spoiler, where she picks up Becca from a party and Becca is drunk. And Zoe keeps tissues and Gatorade in her car to be there for Becca because she knows exactly how Becca reacts for partying too much. And in that conversation and in that caring for her, Becca says that she wished Zoe could make her fake IDs because of some things that happened. That does not warrant you starting this empire or your part in the empire. Obviously, you were interested too, but I love that from her perspective, it's like, Becca just made me do it. It was her idea. We're doing this because of her.
Exactly. And we get some weird financial dynamics between the two of them. Becca seems to be from a wealthier family, and Zoe's making it seem like that Becca's throwing her money around to manipulate Zoe. But Zoe wants that money. She took the money.
Exactly. And you see different dynamics in their homes where Zoe's family, we can say, is maybe richer in love than Becca's family.
Yeah, there was a cute scene with her mother, but then also a very tense scene with her brother.
Mm-hmm. There might be more than one person on the other side of the law making money in that home.
So did you have any favorite scenes?
Yes. Actually, the very first scene of the show. In the very first episode, they jump right into plot. You see this raid on the fake ID empire. And Becca is passed out on the couch. She jumps up, takes a swig from this giant bottle of liquor, and then goes into a fake wall in the apartment. And I just love that her self-preservation and wherewithal was so strong that she was like, take a swig for confidence. And then I am hiding in the walls while this goes down. And who knows what influences she was under. And still, she was like, I'm out of here.
Safety first.
She reacted so quickly, so much faster than the other people around her. It was so funny. And a great light immediately into who she is.
Yes, it really set the personalities for both of them. My favorite scene was a little later in this episode when Becca was asking Zoe, how do you make a fake ID? And Zoe's response is, it's easy, even a five-year-old can do it. And as she walks Becca through it, we watch a five-year-old going through the steps of making a fake ID. And it was cute and hilarious.
It felt so triumphant when he successfully got those beers at the end. It was so cute. It just, the show felt so young, so fresh, and it felt like it was told for and by people who are Zoe and Becca's age.
Exactly. And even though it's a criminal story, it is still lighthearted. And I think that's a good balance and mix for this serious topic where they could get in some serious trouble.
Yes, it was a really cool YA approach to true crime.
Right. It does have true crime vibes. I didn't even think of it that way.
So do you want to watch more episodes of Fakes on Netflix?
I do. I would watch Fakes again, seriously. How do you feel?
Same. I'm a very big fan. This is one I might even watch weekly to tease it out a bit. It was very, very funny.
Nice. So how about we go from criminal youth to youth who have some stories they want to share outside of crime?
All right, Beach, well, tell us what happened on Growing Up on Disney Plus.
Sure. This series, created by Brie Larson and Culture House, is a hybrid docuseries that explores the challenges, triumphs, and complexities of adolescence through 10 compelling coming-of-age stories. The series is using some experimental filmmaking to follow the cast of 18 to 20-year-olds as they tell their own story. In this first episode, we meet Vanessa, who tells us about her experiences with colorism. So, Mitu, what were your first impressions of this docuseries?
I loved that Vanessa was in charge of her own story. So, including her own first-person perspectives, including her parents, talking about her experience migrating to the U.S. from Ghana, even talking about some of the affirmations she learned later with her therapist as she was working through her issues with colorism. I just love that it was from her, so it didn't feel like a filmmaking crew, especially one that might be non-Black or specifically non-having to deal with colorism, peering in on her life and being like, oh, this is tough. And instead, it's her from her own perspective. So she sounds like someone with agency and she's sharing the ups and downs and fullness of her experience. So that was like so, so cool to me.
Mm-hmm. It really did feel like she was telling the story versus the Growing Up production team telling us her story. And I like that it covers kind of a beginning, middle, and end. We hear how she came to America and the challenges. She goes into growing up and what she faced with hearing negative comments about her appearance from peers, suffering from cystic acne. And then we get to the point where she finds out what career path she cares about and how therapy is helping her. I know this sounds like spoilers, but you can still watch it and enjoy and get a lot of relatable and meaningful moments from the series, even if you know what's going to happen.
I completely agree. The storytelling was so compelling. And my only, I think, light critique of the show is that I wish we could have trusted the storytelling even more, like trusted Vanessa to lead us, meaning I don't think we needed as much of the experimental storytelling. An example is she's talking with a crush from school and she asks him, who do you like, or something like that when she was a kid. And she said that as she's waiting for him to answer, he goes, oh, that girl over there. And she notices the features that the girl has. And then he tells her, I think explicitly, if I can remember correctly, that she would be prettier if she were lighter. And that's a devastating thing to hear. That's a devastating thing to know that someone who's so young experienced that, which means like in the 2000s, 2010s, 2020s, we're still dealing with this. And they chose to do a reenactment of that scene. And I wonder who that was for. Because I think people who have been othered, I think, relate enough to the experience. And I wonder if we could have instead leaned into more storytelling from Vanessa, more storytelling from her conversation with the group, and less time on reenactments like that.
Yeah, there's definitely an art to finding that balance between people who can directly relate to these experiences from the stories and those who are a little more removed and foreign to it. I see the advantage to these experimental scenes, especially from an entertainment engagement perspective. Mixing it up will keep you more in the story versus just watching Vanessa tell her story. But I agree that some of the scenes might take away from the impact.
Especially because her story inspired a group discussion. So one concept of the show is that she is telling to producers, but also to a group of young people who clearly come from very different backgrounds. And in the conversation, she connects with a couple young people, one from a different community, but a very similar experience with changing appearance because of ethnicity and assumptions around ethnicity. And then she had this really devastating conversation with this other young girl who is also dark-skinned, who also has, I believe, a coarse hair texture like hers, and is talking about the discomfort that she still experiences around her appearance. And I wonder if the show would have benefited from leaning into both of those conversations, that bridge building between young people, versus telling us about something happening and then showing us that happening again.
I bet there are some very excellent conversations on the cutting room floor.
You can tell that her conversation with those two people in the group had to have been, especially with the other girl that she spoke to, I can easily believe a few minutes, maybe 15, 20, and it's reduced to a few seconds, and they were both resolved really quickly. And I think that maybe was a misstep in the sense that it was so good, I just wanted more.
Did you get enough from this pilot episode to motivate you to keep watching more episodes of Growing Up on Disney Plus?
Yes, but in a specific way. I would say for people like us who are adults watching this show, I think this is one that the whole family should watch together. I bet it's inspiring really great conversations that families may not already be having because of these really frank, vulnerable young people telling their stories. So that's how I'd recommend watching. Or if you're someone who works with young people, I think this would be really great to watch.
I agree. I think this is a must watch for people who deal a lot with young people, for people in a parental role, and for young people in that 18 to 22 age who want to hear their peers share their stories. So before we head on to our next show, how about we take a moment to hear about an AG1 supplement? So recently, I started taking this new supplement, AG1, because I wanted to see what all the hype was about.
Oh, okay. And tell me more about it. What's in it?
AG1, made by Athletics Greens, has 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens.
Okay, that's a lot of big words, but they all sound very good for you. How does it taste, though? Are you like chewing grass, or how does it work?
Good question. You'll be pleased to hear it has a mild tropical taste.
Okay, like a casual fruit snack?
Exactly, but with vitamins.
And how much does it cost?
Less than $3 a day.
Ooh. Ooh, okay, so less than like a cold brew habit.
You know it. It fits in your budget.
Has this been reviewed online? Are other people checking this out? What about this hype?
Smart. get a second opinion, you want to hear from more than just me, and Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. And I think it would be great for our listeners to check it out.
Nice. So to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Okay, and we're back. So going from a maybe healthier group discussion to one that is decidedly terrible, our next show is The Patient on FX on Hulu. Dr. Alan Strauss, played by Steve Carell, is a successful, well-regarded therapist who is mourning his wife and has an interesting but mysterious new patient named Jean, maybe, played by Donald Gleason. As the men get to know each other, Jean makes a decision that will change and bind their lives forever.
I'll start off by saying I really like this premise of our suspicious, risky character of Jean bringing in a therapist and seeking some sort of help, support, and the threat, the thrill of what's going to happen to Alan, the therapist.
I agree. I think that Steve Carell and Donald Gleason have a wildly great chemistry, and I think it would be otherwise boring to see two men face off against each other just chatting. And instead, I was riveted because of this inherent tension. Did you buy the premise, though? Did you buy that Jean/Sam, as, and this is in the previews, so I don't think we're spoiling, he is a serial killer who wants to stop this tendency of killing people. So he kidnaps his therapist to get therapy on demand to help figure out why he's doing that and stop.
I honestly did not buy it from this pilot episode. Sam gives an explanation about these compulsive feelings to kill and that he wants to do it again. I don't know if seeking a therapist in your own home is the answer to stopping yourself from killing. I think there are other institutions, agencies, people you could reach out to prevent you from killing other people. But maybe I'm thinking about it not like a serial killer. What's your opinion?
That's what I think. I think you're not putting yourself in the mind of a serial killer, which I am not capable of doing, any feds listening in. But what I mean is, these are two people with big egos. So Sam is playing to Dr. Strauss's ego initially as a patient, building intrigue, interest. And then Sam himself has a huge ego because he thinks he can resolve his own issues. He says that he buys Dr. Strauss's book about figuring out self-healing. He tries other therapists. There's a weird throwaway line where he talks about going to three different Jewish therapists and he chooses one of them. And you know, Dr. Strauss was like, ugh, to just know that you could have not been one of them, but then also you don't want this to happen to the other two people, whoever they are, it's just terrible. But there is an ego thing there where Dr. Strauss keeps coming back, even though he can tell that Jean/Sam is being withholding with information. And Jean/Sam thinks that he can resolve his issues on his own. He doesn't need to bring in any agencies, any other actors. He just needs a good therapist and he'll just nip this in the bud.
So based on your own understanding of mental health services and seeing Alan in this first episode, do you think he is a good therapist?
I don't think so. He seems to make a lot of assumptions. And my understanding of therapy is more open-ended questions. So I was a little bit confused by that. But I think it did help play up what I think they're getting at, which is he's so well regarded. He has such a big ego for a reason.
I do think that that is playing into the story. And it seems like Sam laid some bait and Alan took the bait with how they first met and started having a few sessions. And so there's something about Sam's personality that maybe excites Alan, and Alan wants to be the one to help him fix his issues.
Yes. And I don't want to get into spoilers, but even after the kidnapping, there seems to be still a little bit of a curiosity from Dr. Strauss. And the last thing that I think I want to say about the show is that the pilot is 21 minutes. I love a drama that recognizes that the setup is simple. It's these two people facing off with this huge tension at the center of it. We didn't need this big buildup. We didn't need to establish random side characters. We just got right into it. And I think that is so cool that they trusted their story enough to be like, no, we know this is dope. 21 minutes, you're hooked.
And I think that helps a lot with the thriller aspect. Mm-hmm. It keeps everything moving at a fast pace. They're not trying to stretch it out to an hour. So you can stay in the moment and want to know what happens next.
Exactly. I never checked the time. It just happened and then, woof, it was done.
So now that it's done, do you want to go back for more episodes of The Patient on FX on Hulu?
I do. I would watch again casually. I really liked this. I think the acting is really great. I will say, shout out to Roxane Gay. The speaking on the show is really low. It's a whisper show. That's what she tends to call them. So that you'll have to get used to. But otherwise, fabulous.
I think for me, this is, I would watch again casually. I'm still feeling out Sam and Alan, their dynamic. But like I said in the beginning, I do like the premise.
Me too. And all the episodes are under 30 minutes.
Won't take too long to finish it up.
Mm-hmm. So let's round out this episode with another mystery with Wedding Season on Hulu.
Sure. Wedding Season tells the story of Katie, played by Rosa Salazar, and Stefan, played by Gavin Drea, who fall for each other at a wedding and begin an affair, despite Katie already having a fiancé. 2 months later, at Katie's wedding, her new husband and his entire family are murdered. The police think Stefan did it. Stefan has no idea what's going on, and no one, including us, the audience, knows for sure what the truth is. So, Mitu, what did you think about this action-packed mystery?
Much like Fakes, I love that the setup is so shaky, that these are such unreliable narrators. Stefan is someone who brought a date to a wedding, knew that they were on the brink of a relationship, was potentially going to propose to save it at a wedding, at his friend's wedding. So clearly is maybe not making the best decisions, very love struck, very lovesick. And then Katie is out here sneaking and creeping on her fiance with Stefan and who knows who else. She yelled at Stefan for trying to interrupt her wedding and stop her vows because he thought that they would run away together. And she is kind of sketchy. I don't want to get into spoilers, but she does some things that you're like, oh, maybe you've run from the law before.
She steals phones and watches.
She steals phones and watches.
Yes, it's a great, simple setup of these two people with different approaches to relationships who fall for each other one night, or maybe one just falls for the other. And then tragedy strikes. But these two still seem to be bouncing off of each other. It's really unclear how much they still care for each other at the point of this tragedy. But that's part of the excitement of now us trying to reconstruct, along with the detectives, what have these last 2 months been like, and how can that explain who might want to hurt Katie's fiance, because I guess they never got married, him and his family.
Yes. Oh, no, it's her husband, because she Stan Heron. Mm-hmm.
That adds to the mystery. They died right after it became official.
So she got all that shmoney. I love that. I love that you can't tell if they actually like each other, but now they're stuck together forever and they have to rely on each other when they're both such disasters. And even the points at which I would say the comedy could have been sharper in this show, the conceit is so fun to just watch two train wrecks wreck together and then try to keep plowing forward towards some sort of favorable conclusion that you can't look away. And I would also say that just as an old tried and true show strategy, to your point, they kept coming back to the interrogation scene. So you're also always brought back to the stakes. So as Stefan is talking about how he met Katie or what's going on with his friends or answering questions, you cut away to flashbacks of those scenes. But when you cut back to the present, he's in an interrogation room. So you know that someone's going away for something.
Someone's got to be blamed for this crime. I think the interrogation worked well. And what I liked is this is very serious, but it's both serious and funny. There was a lot of comedy mixed in, specifically in the wedding flashback scenes. So they don't take this super dark, gritty tone to this thriller.
Which was smart. And this is another half hour, too. All of our shows this week were half hours, but this one and The Patient, I was surprised to see as not 42-minute or hour-long shows. They were like, we're getting to the plot. In this case, we're getting to the jokes. And we're getting to the mess.
And I feel like they packed a lot into this episode. It wasn't too much, but it was enough that I know what's happening. I know the premise. I know what we need to figure out. And I feel like it's also compelling storytelling. Everything felt needed, felt like it should be in the episode.
I agree. Nothing felt like it was dragged or just thrown in to fill time. It was all building plot or being very funny.
So was it funny enough to keep you, our comedy fan, watching more episodes of Wedding Season on Hulu?
Yes, y'all, this was a really good week of shows. I watched these shows with a smile on my face. This one I would watch again, and I would recommend for people who also like comedies. Specifically in my case, I might do it as an afternoon watch because it's half hour episodes. I think this is a great one for me to watch on a Saturday afternoon like it's a movie and finish maybe half, if not the full story.
Ooh, interesting approach. I think I would watch this one casually, just one episode a week, spread out the story, make it a weekly event.
Fancy. Okay, well, now tell us about your history with fakes.
I've never had a fake ID. I will admit, though, one time in college, someone wanted to borrow my student ID to get into a sports event.
Ooh, rebellious. I, too, have never had a fake ID, but you and I went to the same college, and our college IDs don't have expiration dates on them, so I have used the college IDs for discounts. That is my life of scheming and scamming. Sometimes I want that couple bucks off at the movie theater.
Oh, wow. This wasn't even like at the student store. This was off campus.
I'm talking about like now.
You're still doing this.
Yes. Well, I mean, thanks to the panty, maybe not in the last 3 years, but prior for sure. I always have it in my wallet because there's no expiration date on it. And who's going to tell you you look too old?
Why haven't you been telling me to do this?
I don't know why you haven't. I know a lot of our friends do this. Our college IDs don't have expiration dates.
Wow. All my friends are scammers and no one let me in on the scam.
I'm sorry. You've never noticed I keep it in my wallet?
No. I don't pay attention to your wallet.
You're not pocket watching? Okay, Beach, where can people find more episodes of The Pilot Podcast?
All you have to do is head to our website at thepilotpodcast.com and be sure to follow us on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ThePilotPod, and you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, your theories on Fakes, the Patient and Wedding Season, because lots of good mysteries happening there, to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.